Welcome on into Sports Talk, folks. Steve Geller, Charlie Long on a chilly New Orleans evening coming to you from the WWL studios and watching this game between Notre Dame and Penn State. We just had an interception for Penn State. The Irish picked off. I'm not sure where the ball is right now. Charlie, you know offhand?
Penn State's 42. Riley Leonard just airmailed it, Steve. And, you know, Mike and I talked about this Notre Dame offensive line is very young. And we mentioned that at the very beginning of the season when they played Texas A&M. That's why we picked A&M in that matchup, was because A&M had a really stout, talented defensive front going up against a really young, inexperienced offensive line for Notre Dame. That's kind of what worries me a little bit for this matchup tonight. That and kind of Riley Leonard, and that was on full display in that last throw. He just, Steve, it's 3rd and 12. He's trying to make a play where there isn't one, and he just airmails it and picked off easily by the safeties, Akee Wheatley, for the Penn State Nittany Lions. So, you know, not the greatest start for really either team. Both defenses are kind of controlling the game early on, which is what we expected.
Yeah.
Right? Like the over-under for this game was, I think, set at 44.5. I think it maybe got up to 45.5. But this was always going to be a low-scoring contest, as you heard from Brad Evans in the Sports Flash there.
Yeah, I definitely thought it would be a defensive slugfest, too. Looking at the Lady Tigers in action, LSU women trying to stay undefeated at Tennessee. The Vols currently up 77-76, 5.5 minutes left in the game there. We'll be definitely keeping an eye on that. Hopefully, Kim Mulkey's squad can regain the lead and close. They are 17-0, as I mentioned, 2-0 in conference play. Volunteers sit 13-1 and 1-1 in the conference. Seen on social media too, Charlie, the New York Jets have completed their interview tonight with Aaron Glenn. He has scheduled the Saints tomorrow morning and then the Raiders tomorrow night, the Jaguars Saturday morning, then the Bears on Saturday evening. So a full slate and a busy man, Aaron Glenn, as the Detroit Lions have a bye week and they get ready for their matchup in the next round.
Aaron Glenn started his career as a New York Jet.
Yeah.
1994 through 2001. Now, he spent time as a coach and a player in New Orleans, so it's a little bit more of a tie there, I think. But Aaron Glenn, Matthew Paris, the Times-Picayune reporter for the Saints, came on the Saints Hour with Ewan Nowak, and he was saying that he likes Aaron Glenn more than like a Ben Johnson. And that may be a little bit of hyperbole, but Steve, what we saw from that Lions defense,
right,
when everything was on the cards in that matchup against Minnesota, a Minnesota team where people were kind of given the buzz that Sam Darnold was a potential MVP candidate. Yes, he was going to be behind Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen, but
right,
just the season, they were 14-2 up to that point where the
Boy,
Minnesota
did he come
Vikings,
down to earth.
Kevin O'Connell, leading candidate for coach of the year for what he did in Minnesota. And they held him to 9 points to secure the one seed, get that first round bye locked up. And now they don't have to go on the road in the first round of the playoffs.
You mentioned Matthew Paris, and then we had Chrissy Freud on yesterday from Sports, from USA Today, who interviewed Drew Brees. And that'd be Drew Brees' pick, too, for the organization and Aaron Glenn.
He's a popular name early on, Steve. And, you know, once again, I think he's a really good coach. And he also, like Bobby has said, that he kind of runs the same defense as like Dennis Allen, right? But I think he commands a little bit more
respect
from players than someone like a Dennis Allen would.
Agreed.
So it's a little bit of a different personality type. And that's really kind of what you're looking for. Yes, you would probably want an offensive-minded coach because you've been there, done that with a defensive-minded guy with DA and it didn't work out. Sean was obviously an offensive-minded guy. You know, the special teams kind of wild card with Darren Rizzi, and we saw what happened there for the final basically half of the season. But yeah, I'm looking, you know, you really, it's like Scott Shanley said, Steve, the really coveted head coaching candidates are those CEO types, the ones that kind of command a locker room and command respect, the quote-unquote leader of men, as Scott called them. And I agree with them 100%. That's exactly what you're probably looking for in this next head coaching hire. And I think Aaron Glenn's that.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, and I don't have any issues with, you know, a lot of folks want that clean slate, no prior connections to the team.
I get that.
No Sean Payton, you know, influence. And to me, though, Aaron Glenn seems like the right guy at the right time for this team. And hopefully you can keep Clint Kubiak around if he's interested, if Aaron Glenn would be interested in keeping him around. But I did see that the Kubiak ended up, he was requested to have an interview with
the Seahawks,
mm-hmm, and that the Cleveland Browns also might be interested.
Yeah, Seattle fired Ryan Grubb really quickly. you know, listen, I I don't think Seattle's offense was elite by any stretch of the imagination this year, but you saw some growth from some young players there like Jaxon Smith-Njigba and Zach Charbonnet. I thought it was a little bit, I don't want to call it premature to just get rid of them after 1 year, but
that's everybody now, though.
It really is. It's quick turnarounds in the
NFL.
You
thought it was bad in the NBA. It's starting to get like that in the NFL.
Yeah, it's crazy. And so Cleveland's also potentially looking at Clint Kubiak as well. We'll see what happens with Clint. I think whatever head coach we bring on, I was texting this to Cullen yesterday, whatever head coach we bring on into New Orleans, be the next head coach of the Saints, I want them to be able to pick their own staff. If they say, okay, I want, you know, this coordinator to stay here, okay, I want this position coach to stay here, but then everyone else go find somewhere else, I'm bringing in my guys, I'm fine with that.
You're right. You don't want him to be told this is who you have to keep if you take the job.
Correct, because you're hamstringing a coach. Like, you let them, you let a head coach pick his staff. That's what I would do.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I would think it'll be an interesting dilemma to go through here, and it's just getting started for the team. We know they completed two interviews right now, Anthony Weaver, Mike Kafka, Aaron Glenn tomorrow, and I'm sure there's going to be even more after that. We know Rizzi will still get an interview with this team. Not sure when he'll get his go with the squad. We did find out today, though, that we will get Mickey Loomis making his end-of-season press conference Monday at 11 a.m. We'll be getting probably into a ton of that on the Second Guest Show with Bobby and Mike at the Silver Slipper.
I don't think they'll have a decision made by then, obviously. No. But yeah, it'll be interesting to hear from Mickey about this entire process and see what he has to say about it.
Looking at the women's basketball game going on, LSU at Tennessee. Tigers have tied the game up. It is 84-all with 2 minutes left to play. Definitely keeping an eye on this one. The Tigers 17-0 on the season. Tennessee 13-1, so a big-time matchup early on. The Tigers number 6 in the nation right now, and Tennessee number 16. We're still scoreless here at the Orange Bowl between Notre Dame and Penn State.
Penn State's driving, though, Steve. They got it all the way down to the Notre Dame 15, first and 10 in the red zone. And so, I mean, these red zone trips are going to be crucial with both of these defenses and how well they play. Coming away with 7 here would be gigantic for Penn State.
It'd be, like you said, with that turnover, too, that would be massive, getting those points off of a turnover. Key for the Penn State Nittany Lions against the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. We expect it to be a big defensive brawl. We're going to take a break here on Sports Talk, and when we get back, a little break from football, and we'll be talking some baseball. Yes, next month, college baseball cranks up, and Charlie and I are so stoked to get into it. Well, one of our favorites from D1Baseball.com, Mark Etheridge, will be joining us after the break, previewing the conference and LSU, of course. So be right back after this. Stay tuned right here on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Keeping up with the college football playoff going on right now. It's the end of the first quarter at the Orange Bowl. Notre Dame Fighting Irish and Penn State Nittany Lions scoreless there. Definitely be updating you throughout the show from the gridiron. We're going to go to the diamond now, and happy to welcome in D1Baseball.com SEC analyst Mark Etheridge. Always appreciate the time, Mark. How the heck have you been?
Oh, man, this is a great time of year. You got football going on. You got the playoffs. You've got baseball kicking off practice on Monday. I mean, you have games in a month. I mean, this is a great time of year.
Yeah, between the Saints struggling this season and the Pelicans right now, me and my co-host here, Charlie, we're just dying to get to the college baseball season and hoping LSU can save us from the misery we've been dealing with so far.
Yeah, well, I got good news for you. They're going to be really good. There's been a huge talent influx. I mean, lost a lot of players off last year's team. I mean, if you look at it, a lot of the everyday position players, but just about all of the pitchers that threw primary innings last year are gone. But the good news is that LSU is just kind of a reloading process. Jay Johnson and staff went out. They brought in some impact transfers. They've got some guys who are on, you know, who have improved from, we'll just say, secondary roles last year, who should move into primary roles this year. And then also, I mean, there's a freshman class that really sets up well for the future. I really like what I see from LSU. We met as a D1 baseball staff earlier this week, and debated our top 20 and our top 25. We went for over 3 hours trying to decide, you know, who we like, who maybe we like a little less. And LSU came out pretty well on that. There are really high expectations for the Tigers heading into this spring.
I can't wait to see y'all's top 25 ranking, Mark. I just want to, you know, get start off with some of these players, kind of introducing the new faces, because as you did mention, a lot of pieces are gone from last year's team, so it's going to be a lot of new faces. One of the faces, though, first I want to ask you about and kind of the expectations for him entering this year. I'm really excited to see Chase Shores, and he's not one of the transfers. He's been at LSU for a while. He missed all last year recovering from Tommy John that he underwent in April of 2023. I don't know, Mark. I think this dude, like, early on weekend starter potential for the Tigers, I think he's going to be awesome for them.
Well, you know, if you remember 2 years ago, he was a highly regarded freshman who came in, and he even started on the weekend early in the year. And
right.
He was a high 90s velocity, and he got injured, and he missed all of the rest of the, you know, the title year, and then missed all of last year. And he was actually really close. He kind of flirted with it, being able to come back for the postseason. And Jay Johnson mentioned in one of our offseason conversations that had LSU made the super regionals, Chase Shores would have been available to pitch. That's how close he was to being ready. And you know, that might have made a difference for them. Might have carried them to Omaha, because he's a really talented pitcher. One, he's a junior, he's draft eligible, and he's a first-round profile type of pitcher. When I saw him this fall, he was throwing 98, and he had a really good slider. It was a little bit inconsistent, but when it was on, it was an out pitch. So you have to think that as he continues his, you know, his maturation and his development post surgery, that he's going to be a guy who could be one of the best pitchers in the conference, because it's the velocity's there, the stuff is there. It's just he just needs time on the mound.
Looking at some of the young guns coming in, this freshman class for this LSU squad, like you mentioned, a lot of top names. What can you tell us about this outfielder, Derek Curiel, that I know, a highly rated guy that everybody's excited to get their eyes on?
Yeah, he's the best outfielder on the team. I mean, and there's a lot of competition for that spot. I think he's going to be an everyday player. He's going to hit near the top of the lineup. He's a guy who's, I think he's going to be more bat tool than power, at least right away, but the power will come. And I think, you know, he's athletic enough. He can do some things on the bases. It's just you remember how Dylan Cruz was his freshman year. You know, he wasn't quite the power guy that he became. And I think that's where Curiel is right now. I think he's going to be one of the top freshmen in the country. He's, I would guess, probably hit, you know, probably second in the lineup, second or third, one of those kind of guys, and just play every day. And he's kind of the heir apparent. I think he's going to be the next one. Maybe that's too much to put on him right now, but certainly he's going to play a lot his freshman year and by his sophomore and junior year. I mean, he's got everything you need to be the next guy, right? To follow that lineage of great LSU sluggers.
And then looking at some of the new pieces, talking about the transfer portal and reloading this roster, as Jay Johnson always does, a couple of really exciting faces. I want to first ask you about the pitcher, a pitching side of thing, with Anthony Ianson, who transferred in from UC San Diego. Another guy that's really highly regarded from the transfer portal that Jay Johnson was able to bring to Baton Rouge, and kind of how he projects in his first year in the SEC.
Yeah, I would think that he's going to be one. Certainly, if he's not a weekend starter, he's going to be, you know, in that mix. He's a transfer from UC San Diego, played for Team USA last year. Mid-90s velocity, really good breaking ball. Understands pitchability. I think he's an advanced guy who's ready to come in and test his wares in the SEC, the best conference in the country. And I think he's a guy. One of the ones I'd like to mention is Connor Ware. He's a junior college transfer. He was at Pearl River Community College last year. Was injured, didn't really throw a lot, and that's the only reason he made it to campus. Because he made it to campus, honestly, I think he was LSU's best pitcher this fall. He was just blowing people away. The time I saw him, he threw two innings and struck out five batters, didn't allow a hit. I mean, he's just kind of one of those guys that just understands how to pitch, and he's got really good stuff. I think he's someone who probably maybe some people don't know about because he was injured last year, who's going to come in and play a huge role. Maybe he could even be like, you know, he could be like a Griffin Herring, right? Who had a varied role last year. He could close. He could play long relief. He could, you know, he could start if you needed him to. I think he's a guy who could fill a lot of spots for LSU this year.
And then another key transfer from Utah Valley, Daniel Dickinson. I remember, Mark, we talked with you about like the plan for him coming in because you had Jared Jones returning and Stephen Milam at second base and then Michael Braswell returning at shortstop. And so we're kind of wondering what the plan would be for Daniel Dickinson because the talent's fantastic. He was one of the top players out of the portal out of Utah Valley, you know, 369 career batting average there. You know, their plan to potentially play him at third base, if I'm not mistaken, Mark, and kind of keep the rest of the infield at basically what it was last year, just a year advanced.
Yeah, there's a lot of flexibility there between those three guys, with Dickinson, Stephen Milam, and Michael Braswell. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they all kind of move around a little bit and they try to find that perfect balance between the three because they are all kind of similar defensively. I think Dickinson, the thing to watch with him is how does he handle SEC breaking stuff. I mean, he's going to see stuff that he hasn't seen at Utah Valley, but he's a very competitive kid, and I think he'll be able to adjust. I think that's the thing, though. I mean, it's when you come in with the highly regarded stature that he did, I mean, one of the top players in the portal, there's a lot of pressure on you, and I think maybe LSU will kind of slow play him a little bit and not throw him into a high profile role and just see what he does and then let him kind of find his balance. And then I think he could be a guy who could be a huge, stretch run kind of impact player because he certainly got the talent.
We know that the SEC is a gauntlet, minor league baseball that we get to watch in college constantly. Just wondering, who are the other heavy hitters that we can expect to really challenge LSU this year?
Well, Texas A&M will be the preseason number one team in the nation. I mean, they returned so much from last year, and they added a lot. I mean, even with losing Jim Schlossnagel, their head coach who moved over to Texas, they promoted one of their assistants, Michael Early, who's a younger, head coach. So that's obviously a concern. You have first year head coach, never been one before. He's got to figure out how to live life in the toughest conference in the country. But their talent is just so overwhelming. You got to think that they're the team to beat, at least from a talent standpoint. I think otherwise, you got Arkansas, who's probably got the best pitching staff in the country. The question is, are they going to hit enough? I mean, they've got, honestly, 5-6 guys who would be probably more than that, honestly, 7-8 guys who would be weekend starters anywhere else, and they're just going to have to find roles for them. I mean, it's kind of that kind of embarrassment of riches. Tennessee, the defending national champions, they lost a ton, kind of like LSU did, but they reloaded well. And Tennessee's a developmental program. The transfers that they bring in are usually impact players. They don't bring in that many, and they're able to continue to develop, the freshmen and who become sophomores that they bring in. I think they're going to be really good. And I think the other ones to watch would be Georgia. Georgia's kind of done something different in the SEC. They've relied heavily on the transfer portal. And Georgia's traditionally been a high school hotbed, and they brought in tons of great freshmen. And new coach Wes Johnson, who was at LSU, has kind of flipped the script a little bit. And he's gone out and grabbed older players from the portal and brought those in. And on paper, they look really good. So it's just a question of how all those new faces mesh together. Get everybody pulling in the same direction because talent-wise, they're incredible. And the other team I would mention would be Florida. Florida, you remember last year in the regular season, kind of had a so-so mediocre regular season and then figured it out in the postseason, made it all the way to the College World Series Final Four. They have a lot of their position players back. They lost Jack Caglione, the two-way star who was arguably the best player in the country. So finding who's going to be that guy, right? I think for them, because they've got a lot of really good players. Who's going to be the one person they can look to carry them, when they really need it? I think those six in the SEC, with Texas A&M, LSU, Arkansas, Tennessee, Florida, and Georgia, that's the top tier. And then there's a whole bunch, right behind them. I mean, we can go on with this. I mean, they're probably 13, 14 SEC teams that have maybe even more than that have legitimate postseason aspirations. It's probably everyone but Missouri. And then, if you're Missouri, you're thinking, well, why not us? Everybody else is this good. Why can't we get there? So I do think that the SEC continues to get better and better every year. Adding Oklahoma and Texas to the mix is only going to make it deeper and more challenging to accumulate wins. And as a result, it's going to be really fascinating to see at the end of the year. The SEC got 11 teams in the postseason last year. They added two in Texas and Oklahoma who made the postseason. Well, that's 13 right there. I mean, what's really realistic? It's for postseason berths as we head into the postseason.
It's going to be a gauntlet once again, Mark. And, it's funny that, your comments about Arkansas just feels like an echo every single year with the Razorbacks, doesn't it? But just also, I wanted to highlight Wes Johnson and what he's done with Georgia because, Georgia was not necessarily in the dumps, but it seems like they really kind of rose out of nowhere in Wes Johnson's first year. I remember we talked with Joe Healy about this. Trey Phelps, the freshman phenom, now going into the sophomore campaign. I'm intrigued by Georgia in 2025 and seeing what they can do in Wes Johnson's second year.
Yeah, offensively they look like a 1-9. There's no holes. That kind of team, and it's going to be fascinating. I mean, Slade Alford was a really good hitter for them last year. He returns. Kobe Branch, Trey Phelps. All those, those are returning guys, but they added some really good players out of the portal. Devin Obi is a Duke transfer who joined in January. Nolan McCarthy, who was at Kentucky on their, they tied to the SEC title last year. He was their center fielder. He moved over. Robbie Burnett, the UNC Asheville transfer, he's a really talented player, maybe a little undersized, which is why he's not in pro ball, but a really productive player. And they just keep going on, man. I mean, they brought in, 10 to 12 transfer position players who all think they're going to play. So if they have any injuries, if they have guys slumped, they want to play matchups, they have all of those options available to them. So it's going to be it's a different way, as opposed to bringing in a lot of freshmen and hoping they develop. They're bringing in guys who have proven themselves, usually at lower levels, but it's going to be, I'm really curious to see how this all works out, getting them all, to buy in. And that's Wes's job is, he chose this path, and it's going to be one of the bigger storylines in the sport this year to see how this all materializes.
Mark, I was really, looking ahead. I wanted to see, if A&M and Texas played each other this year, and they do. But they play in Austin, unfortunately. I was very disappointed at that. But I really want to see Jim Schlossnagel's return to College Station. But I want to get your thoughts on Schlossnagel's first year at Texas and kind of what the expectations are for him. Because I know we talked a little bit about the exit and how kind of controversial it was when he left A&M for, hated rival UT in their first year in the SEC. Just kind of get your breakdown on all that.
Yeah, I mean, he did such a great job at A&M. And the way he left was such a, probably the only way I could put it is he would like, I have to assume he would like to, I could do over on how that happened. He didn't handle it as well as he could have. And you've got hurt feelings and they're going to get, as you mentioned, A&M's going to go into Texas, and that's going to be an incredible matchup. I have to imagine that we'll have one heck of a struggle within the D1 staff to see who gets to cover that. Kendall Rogers is kind of the head D1 guy, and he's also living in Houston, so he's got a kind of a head up on us. But that would be a great great story to tell. I mean, it kind of tells itself, doesn't it? And I do think that Texas, I mean, Sauce Nagel has won everywhere he's been. He's an incredibly intelligent coach. He understands how to play the game. He built an incredible program at TCU and then was doing it again at A&M. I mean, remember, if Braden Montgomery doesn't get hurt last year in the postseason, maybe they win the whole thing. I do think that, you know, he's going to win at Texas. The question is, how long is it going to take? Right? It could take more than a year or two. And certainly when the program he left, A&M, is preseason number one, that's one more factor in this equation, right? So I think that Texas will hit. Sauce Nagel teams always, they draw a lot of pitches. They play up to their ability. They're not going to underachieve. And I think as a result, they're going to go as far as their pitching takes them. And they've kind of got a rebuilt pitching staff. And as a result, maybe it's not quite to the level of some of these other teams that we talked about. But I think on any given day that they can certainly compete. And as a result, they're going to be a top 20, top 25 kind of club this year. And it's only going to, based on his track record, I have to assume they're going to get better each and every year, especially with the whole, with NIL changing things, the house settlement, all of these things are going to go in Texas's favor. And as a result, he's going to be in a really good, really good program going forward.
Mark, definitely always appreciate the knowledge you drop on us. Thanks so much for your time again today.
Thanks, Mark.
Absolutely. Take care, guys.
Mark Etheridge, D1Baseball.com, SEC writer. You can check out all his great work there. Follow him at Mark Etheridge on Twitter. Hold that tiger, the enigma. LSU women's basketball team 18-0 have beaten the Tennessee Volunteers 89-87. Kilmoke squad, like I mentioned, remains undefeated on the season.
And a quick update from Miami, the Orange Bowl. Penn State 3, Notre Dame nothing. About midway through the second quarter here. Very low-scoring game, as anticipated, as we said earlier. So Penn State is moving the ball. They're close to midfield at this point. Notre Dame has not been able to get anything going offensively. A pair of punts and an interception so far for the Fighting Irish.
We're a little past midfield as we're going to 8 o'clock tonight. Come back with more sports talk, though. So stay tuned right after this on WWL. Man, oh, man, we are in a great time right now. Folks might think we're crazy talking about college baseball as we got 5 straight days of playoff action football. Starting tonight, we got this game, Notre Dame and Penn State. The Nittany Lions have a 3-0 lead right now. Tomorrow's the Cotton Bowl. And then starting Saturday, excitement starts here on WWL, 3 o'clock. Chargers and Texans in Houston kicking off 3:30, followed by the Steelers at Ravens, 7 p.m. Sunday's a triple header, starting with the Broncos at Bills, kickoff at noon, followed by Packers at Eagles, then followed by Commanders at Buccaneers. Come Monday night, we got Monday Night Football, Vikings at Rams. That has been moved now to Arizona, that matchup. Kickoff is still the same at 7:15. Get all the action the way you like it all weekend long on your home for the NFL and the Gulf South, WWL. Charlie, it's tough doing a show and trying to keep an eye on this football game. So what is going on here right now?
Well, I'm doing the same thing here, Steve. I'm looking up. So Penn State is currently on a 14-play, 85-yard drive that's taken about 7 minutes off the clock. They're all the way down to the Notre Dame 5, and they just converted a 4th-and-2. And from what I didn't see the play, but I just double-checked. And guess who? Tyler Warren, guy that Mike and I were talking about earlier, a first-round prospect at tight end, one of the best tight end prospects in the entire country, picks up a huge 4th-and-2 in the red zone. So Penn State is going all in for the 7 right here, and it would be gigantic. And it looks like they just got it. Yep. So touchdown Penn State. Penn State takes an early 9-0 lead in the first half. Notre Dame, you got to figure out something offensively because, the way this is looking, I mean, the offense has just been stagnant early on. And Penn State's defense deserves a ton of credit for that, but they got to figure something out. This could get ugly.
It could get ugly with our pick six segment, too, as the Cajun Cannons, the only one that took the Nittany Lions.
Yeah, Bobby's the one that picked them. Mike, you and me all picked Notre Dame. So we're hoping the Fighting Irish can turn around here in the second half.
Looking at this weekend of NFL action, is there a game that you maybe you're most keyed in on? For me, it's obviously the Eagles taking on the Packers. Since okay. I'm going fly, Eagles fly.
Yeah.
That makes sense. It was good to see Jalen Hurts was a full go at practice today, but so was, Packers QB. And Jordan Love. We'll see what happens with that matchup there. Interested to see, though. I think the Eagles can roll over the Pack. So, like I said, curious to see how Green Bay responds in Philly.
I think the game I'm most looking forward to is probably one of the final two games. The Washington Commanders at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I can't wait for.
Mike Evans versus Marshawn.
I am rooting so hard for Washington in that game. For one, I love Jaden Daniels, and he's, as Mike says, the most humble superstar he's ever talked to. Going against that Buccaneers defense that's been pretty suspect. Like, they don't have much of an edge rush, and they don't have much cornerback play. So if you're looking at Jaden Daniels versus that defense, he could potentially feast. However, Baker Mayfield has been lighting defenses off all season. So
Baker's definitely looked like that dude. So impressed. The guy that I had definitely written off and figured he was a bust in the NFL.
And shockingly enough, entering the weekend, of all of the wild card games, that is the highest over-under point total at 50.5 between Tampa Bay and Washington. And then also Minnesota and Los Angeles. We talked about this when we were doing pick six yesterday, Steve. The matchups favor Los Angeles, I feel, in this game. And just the Rams' weapons, their pass-catching weapons at wide receiver versus the Vikings' DBs, I think that's an advantage, obviously, for Los Angeles. And the Rams' defensive line versus the Vikings' offensive line, I think, is advantage Los Angeles. Those are two real key areas that I'm keying in on, and that's why I picked the Rams in this matchup.
And now we have a neutral site for the game as well.
Yeah, they're playing in Arizona, which is, you know, due to the wildfires in Los Angeles. And once again, just terrible.
But I think I'm kind of in that where I feel like the Rams can pull out the upset here. I just trust, you know, Sean McVay and that offense.
Since it's been moved, Minnesota's moved up to -2.5 on the spread. It was 1.5, and right. Now they're up to 2.5 because it's a true neutral site. I do feel like the Rams could pull off the upset too, though. I agree with you, Steve. So those are the two games I'm looking forward to the most, Washington, Tampa Bay, and then Minnesota, Los Angeles. Otherwise, yeah, the Packers and Eagles should be fun. The Broncos, Bills, I feel is a little sneaky. I was the only one to take the Broncos +8.5 here.
It's showing you trust.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, the Bills, they got a lot of pressure on their plate, I feel, Steve, to really kind of make a deep, deep run into this postseason.
For sure.
Especially Josh Allen's potential MVP season. So there's a lot really on the line here for Buffalo because, you know, they really want to get that rematch with Kansas City later down the line. And to get there, you're going to have to beat Sean Payton's Broncos and potentially John Harbaugh's Ravens, which it's not an easy run.
What was scaring me about the most when we made our picks was taking the Ravens, given that 9.5 points. I expect a playoff game to be a little bit closer than that against the Steelers, but I still roll with Baltimore in that game.
It's just an AFC North grudge match. Logic tells you the Ravens will smoke the Steelers.
Right.
They're the better team.
But we know logic goes out the door in the
logic
NFL.
And this is why, you know, I made a mistake when I was doing my pick'em, Steve, because I picked all these road teams to cover these spreads. I think it's going to be a fun wildcard weekend. I don't think there's going to be that many blowouts. Just looking at these matchups, the Steelers' offense is what worries me the most about them covering a potential 10-point spread against Baltimore. Baltimore's going to be without Zay Flowers.
Yeah.
They still got Lamar. They still got Derrick Henry. They'll be able to put up points. Can the Steelers keep it close? Like, keep it within a touchdown. Maybe even, like, a couple field goals, right? 6 points to 9 points, right? As long as it's not double digits, then that pick wins. So that's all I'm rooting. Just, Russ, keep it tight. That's all I'm asking from you.
Playoff action, college today, tomorrow night, then NFL Saturday, Sunday, Monday. What a great time to be a sports fan. We're taking a break right now on Sports Talk. Be right back with more as we close it out after this on WWL. Closing up shop here on Sports Talk, the Nittany Lions have a 10-0 lead over the Fighting Irish. 2 minutes left till halftime over there. Definitely can't wait to get off and watch the rest of that matchup. Charlie, looking at our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line before we get out of here, too. They say, Charlie, bet the home teams. Only one team, home team lost during wild card weekend last year, and that's when Green Bay stomped Dallas.
No, I get it. Trust me. And I don't like my picks, but I think that these games are going to be tight.
Right. You're getting points in this, too. It's not just straight up.
I'm riding with the Chargers over the Texans, and maybe the Texans will do what they did to the Browns last year in wild card weekend, so that could be a fail pick. I don't think the Steelers are going to beat the Ravens. I just think it's going to be like a touchdown game, maybe even a field goal.
That seems like a high number, right? Nine.
Yeah,
and a half.
Feels like 9.5 is too much. Broncos, I think they can keep it close with the Bills. I think the Bills win. And then, you know, I like the Eagles. I'm rooting hard for the Commanders, so I'm not taking the Bucks in that game. But then, you know, the Vikings and Rams is neutral, so it doesn't really matter.
That's a wrap on today's edition of Sports Talk. Tune in tomorrow when Mike Hawes, Deuce McAllister have their season finale for Fans and the Pro.